From the home of the Codebreakers and the birthplace of modern computing, this is the Bletchley Park podcast.
Welcome to this additional episode of the Bletchley Park podcast, the Intelligence Factory. In this episode, we're bringing you the VIP opening event for Bletchley Park's major new exhibition, the Intelligence Factory. We'll bring you a flavour of the event, including a panel discussion led by History Hits Dan Snow, interviews with some of the people who helped put this exhibition together. But first, we'll go back a couple of days. There's many ways of supporting Bletchley Park, and one of them is to become a friend of Bletchley Park. And one of the benefits is special previews of our new exhibitions. So 2 days ago, I joined more than 80 of our friends as they got to be the first people who saw the Intelligence Factory.
Right, good afternoon, everybody. First of all, how lovely to have everyone back on site for a Friends event. Obviously, this is our first one since 2019, so a long time coming, but hopefully you're all going to have a lovely time looking at our new exhibition. So, Perenelle Craddock is our Head of Programmes. Perenelle is just going to give you a quick overview so you know a bit about what's over in the exhibition. Once that's done, we are then going to take you over to the exhibition where you will all be basically left to just wander at your own speed through the exhibition. So without any more ado, I'll just pass you over to Perenelle.
Thanks, Sue. Hi, everyone. Lovely to see you all here, and we're thrilled to show you what we've got on show today. Three things, hopefully, that you will enjoy. The first, of course, is Block A itself. This is the first time we've been able to open Block A up to visitors. And after a bit of a facelift, there was a huge project before we even started on the exhibitions to restore Block A to its wartime appearance. At Block A, it's Grade 2 listed. It now looks as close as we can get it to how it would have done when the Codebreakers were working in there in World War II. And it was the first of 8 brick blocks that were constructed from 1942. It's a real visual contrast to the Intelligence Factory exhibition, and we're hoping the two will make people think about Bletchley Park in lots of different ways. And hopefully, even with you who know us so well, hopefully we'll find some surprises in there for you. I hope you have a wonderful time, and everyone said we'd love to know what you think.
Lovely, thank you, Perenelle. So, shall we start going and having a look around? And enjoy the rest of your afternoon over there.
My name's Nick Short. I'm a friend of a friend of Bletchley Park, and I've just looked around the exhibition. Firstly, the buildings have been renovated to a fantastic level, and it really takes you back to what it must have looked like in World War II. But the exhibition itself is first rate. It explains logically, clearly, and simply the fantastic story that the men and women here conducted during World War II, and I think it's a real tribute to them. It really does, and it's astonishing. And as I've been reminded, up to 9,000 people worked here at its height in early 1945, and buildings like this really give you a sense of the scale of the operation in those days.
My name's Alan Smith.
And I'm Tracy Smith.
And we're here because I'm a friend of Bletchley Park, because my wife bought it for me for my birthday 2 years ago.
2 years ago.
And she bought it for me again last year, because I enjoy it so much. And she's going to buy it for me this year as well.
Allegedly,
so,
yes.
So it's not really a surprise for a birthday present.
You've got birthday presents covered, haven't you?
But for the next, lots of years.
You're not putting a date on it.
No. So we were very grateful to be invited to the exhibition.
I think the thing I've found about it is that it's filled in a lot of the gaps. You know, we've come here for a few years now, and we've seen different bits, scratched our heads, tried to understand what it's all about.
Come back again, scratched our heads, tried to understand what it's all about.
But this is like the background. A lot of it knits it all together.
Yeah. That's brilliant. Yes. Yeah,
it does. And also it pulls in the new with the old. So
The GTHQ is working nowadays, and how
it's all done on mobile phones, and yes.
I'd say this all the time. Every time I come here, I learn something new every time.
Absolutely.
I've been coming here for 11, 12 years now.
Well, you're right. We learn something every time. But a lot of it is because we learned it last time and forgotten it.
And we go home and go, what was that all about? We need to go back to Bletchley again.
Oh, that's how it works, yeah.
And this is one of the benefits of being a friend, isn't it? That you get to these previews.
Absolutely.
You do. We'd recommend it to anybody. Yeah. Young definitely. Or old. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of important lessons to be learned, I think, walking around Bletchley as well.
My name's Malcolm Osborne. I used to visit Bletchley Park frequently when I worked for Post Office Telephones on training courses. So I've been coming here since 1963. So I absolutely adore Bletchley Park, and I've followed with interest the whole history and all the wonderful pods and everything that we see on the website. And this exhibition is absolutely fantastic. And I say to everybody, you must come. And I realised that I'm going to have to visit it several times. It's so much to take. It's huge, and it makes you feel so proud for all what these people achieved here at Bletchley Park. Don't miss it. When you see all the personal letters, the memos, the stories, listening to their voices, it's incredibly personal, and you really feel that you're right in it alongside them. And then you're in awe of all what they achieved, which is not easy. Even listening to a wonderful pod, you love it very much. But when you come here and see it, absolutely mind-blowing, yes. Thank you very much. It's really first class.
So I'm Anna. I live in London. I'm a Bletchley Park friend. The first time I came here, and it blew my mind at the time. And it continues doing so since the first time. And this exhibition is simply amazing. We had an idea of the scale, and we knew figures. Yeah, 9,000 people, but this makes it so real and visual, and is amazing, amazing. And we realized that Bletchley Park is really the source of a lot of things that are done today. It's just that we have more technology, and that is brilliant. I would say is firstly something very revealing of how important this place was for the UK, but also for Europe and the world. So I think it's not just UK histories. We are free today. We enjoy democracies with all the challenges we are facing, but it's thanks to people who worked here. And it's very moving and touching, and it's great.
Also, a lot of those people were women, and it gave women an opportunity to move into fields they hadn't moved into.
Absolutely. I mean, why in general, why I so interested in Bletchley Park? Of course, there is the World War II bit, which I find fascinating, the signal intelligence bit, which I love, but also there are two things that are striking. Is the role of the women, and we are still fighting to be recognized today in our workplaces and so on. And these ladies did so much at the time. That's something we need to remember and recognize. The other thing is from an organization perspective. Every time I read about Bletchley Park, there are so many things that could be learned for our companies and organizations today. And it's also this startup thing. There were 150 people, I think, in 38 when they came, and then ended up with 9,000. And all this machine worked and won the war. And you say, wow, how a thing going from 150 to 9,000 in 5 years could be so successful. So why don't we look at what worked? And all the people who are unseen, and that happens as well in the companies we're working in today, is that there are a lot of people who do amazing work. They are not showing off, but it makes the machine work and be successful. And there are a few who are the ones who are in the spotlight. But at the end of the day, it's everybody's contribution. And this exhibition, totally shows that. It's amazing.
So ladies and gentlemen, good evening. For those I've not met, I'm Ian Sandon, and I have the honour and privilege to be CEO of Bletchley Park Trust. Welcome to this preview evening. Tonight, we're offering you the opportunity to view two new exhibitions ahead of their opening to the public on Thursday. These are located in the recently restored blockade and provide an important addition to the Bletchley Park offer. The first is the Intelligence Factory, a new permanent exhibition that tells the story of the industrialisation of the operations here at Bletchley Park between 1942 and 1945. The exhibition explores why this was needed, the sheer scale of the challenge, how it was undertaken, and the impact it had on the outcome of World War II. It employs a range of interpretive techniques, interactives, and, very importantly, the voices of the veterans who worked. It also includes some time portals that provide glimpses of how the sort of work that was undertaken at Bletchley Park in the 1940s is done today. The second exhibition, The Art of Data, is housed in our new temporary exhibition space, also in Block A. This is the first in what will be an annual cycle of exhibitions. These will aim to showcase new and different content, which explores themes inspired by Bletchley Park, Bletchley Park's wartime story, but not constrained by it. It is colourful, and we think engaging, and will hopefully leave you with much food for thought. Now, bringing both the restoration of Block A and these exhibitions to fruition does not happen without a great deal of help. I therefore need to record our very grateful thanks and gratitude to all our supporters and donors, without whose help this would not be possible. I must particularly thank BAE Systems for their support as lead principal sponsor of the Intelligence Factory. And it's great to welcome a large contingent of the company here this evening. FCC Communities Foundation for their help as principal supporter of the Intelligence Factory and towards the restoration of Block A. And again, it's lovely to have representatives of FCC here with us tonight. Thomas Kempner Jr. Foundation for their generous gift as a principal supporter of the Intelligence Factory and towards the restoration of Block A. And we're delighted to welcome Tom Kempner and his wife Kitty here this evening, all the way from New York. Finally, Milton Keynes Community Foundation for their grant to ensure that our historic buildings meet modern accessibility requirements and can be enjoyed by everyone. And yet again, it's good to see representatives of the foundation here tonight. We're very excited and relieved to be opening these exhibitions this week. They've been developed over the last few years, despite the impediments of the COVID pandemic. There have been many challenges with staff being furloughed, working from home, and endless video meetings. But we finally got here thanks to some phenomenal collaborative work by a large and hard-working team of people. As always, it's very hard to thank each and every person who's had part of this process and contributed to these fantastic exhibitions. And it is somewhat invidious to pick out individuals or organisations. However, I'm going to do so. So in true Oscar style, for the Intelligence Factory, RAA for their design, and all the subcontractors who made up the build consortium led by Mark. And to Emily Scott Deary, who's with us tonight, who was the interpretive lead. I'd also like to mention Rose Design, who have worked with us for many years and whose design expertise you can see here behind us and on all the marketing collateral of the exhibition. From the home team, specific mention to Phil Atkins, our head of site works, who managed the restoration of Block A. Perrinel Craddock, head of programmes, who project managed the exhibitions. And both, of course, led their teams in delivering the project. For the Art of Data, Easy Tiger for the design of the exhibition and the hub for the fit-out. Also, Ellen Simonson and Amelia Bloor from Mrs. Richards for curating the project. And a special thanks for the immense effort put in by our own exhibition manager, Erica Munro, in delivering this project against a very challenging timeline. I'm very pleased that so many of the individuals involved in the design, creation and installation of these exhibitions are with us tonight. And a big thank you to one and all for your efforts. It therefore just remains for me to signpost the rest of the evening for you. When I stop talking, very soon, we will be moving swiftly to a short panel session for which we've gathered together some true experts in the field of intelligence history. They will be interrogated by Anne Snow and hopefully provide you with some insights into the industrial phase of the Bletchley Park story. We will not be holding a Q&A session at the end, but please feel free to cycle up and Drew Spine passion to them, and they're happy to take questions from you and afterwards. At about 7 o'clock, when the panel concludes, food will be served in here, and we also invite you to head off at your own pace to see the exhibitions, which will be signposted as you go. The food and drink will keep flowing in Block C until the end of the event, so please don't worry, you'll miss out if you get the exhibitions. Our communications team will be around this evening, I suspect you've taken some of your photographs already, and we're conducting a vox pop at the end of the exhibition, so please do give your initial feedback. We're waiting to hear it. My final thank you is to you all for coming. We hope you enjoy the evening, and that as well as having an opportunity to meet friends and colleagues, that you'll enjoy and be inspired by our new exhibition. So without further ado, Dan, over to you on the panel.
Thank you very much indeed.
Hi, my name's Robert Clements. Visited the exhibition this afternoon. Really brilliant. So much floor space, well laid out. The interactive listening is just fantastic. And just looking at information gathering, I'm looking at the work that the indexers did and the index cards. Yeah. And just any trivial information about a commander, if they weren't well or they'd done something or they had a habit.
It's all that stuff you don't think about. Yeah. How that would have had a knock-on.
Yeah, and I sort of tied it in with the information gathering from today where people can look at people's phones and work out the connections. And that, it takes you back to that time in the war where the indexers just built up an array of information about everything. And you look at the cards with all the three-letter indexes and someone's got to work everything out and tie that in with, it's just mind-boggling, really. So really enjoyed that side of it as well. The other bit I've got to say is just the wall with the letters, the internal memos and things, just gives you an insight. The one I liked was there's a letter where somebody says, I'm not so much worried about the girls moving elsewhere in the building. Their social standing needs to be good. It doesn't matter whether their intelligence is what we need, but it's more what school they went to. Or yeah, that's it. So I just thought that you don't really notice that with some of the exhibitions, and obviously it's the minutiae of daily life, but that, and it's just lovely to see that as well, you know. So thank you, really good.
Our VIP for the event tonight is none other than History Hits Dan Snow. Hello Dan, good to have you back with us again.
It's good to be back on this podcast.
You do us a lot of good when you come on this podcast. People seem to like you more than me,
I can't believe that's true. But you do me a lot of good coming on this podcast. I learn all about, and you've done me a lot of favours. You've given me access to veterans things. So I'm always incredibly grateful.
Well, Betty Webb is a big fan of yours.
It's mutual.
You've just been round our exhibition. Tell us what you think of it.
I thought it was really interesting. I'm used to coming to Bletchley and focusing on the old country house sort of weirdness and eccentricities of the mansion.
Yeah.
I'm used to looking at the huts and wasn't it all shambolic and they just built these little plywood virtually huts and it was all a bit, I don't know, wartime and temporary. But you go into that building, brick-built building, and you realise what was going on here in the second half of the war, which was a different level, was a different sense of ambition and size. And it's a factory that you're going into a sort of industrial space where information was gathered and disseminated. And I think that I really enjoy it because it gives me a different sort of flavour of Bletchley Park to my previous trips.
It's not that men in tweed jackets with pipes being genius codebreakers. It's 18, 19-year-old young ladies who are doing 8-hour shifts of drudgery. And that's really what the bigger part of the story is.
Yeah, I often think, and this is true of the Royal Navy, which I know a little bit about in the 17th century. And it's like, often you need people of genius to set things up. Like it helps to have someone like Admiral Blake set up your Commonwealth Navy. But the real genius is then making sure you don't need Blakes to continue, right? So when Nelson dies at the Battle of Trafalgar, it doesn't really matter because you have built a navy, you've built a very resilient organisation that does not require a charismatic genius at the heart of it to operate. And I think probably in a similar way, that's what's happening here at Bletchley. By all means, it's quite useful up front to get the geniuses involved, and goodness knows you do have a gaggle of them here at the start of the war, don't you? But then you work out how to industrialise, how to mechanise, how to replicate and scale that process in a way that doesn't depend on the pipe smoker just working long hours into the night and burning the midnight oil, because obviously that's completely unsustainable. And that's what Bletchley does so brilliantly. And that's why, as a museum, I'm very passionate about it and I'm passionate about the story, because if you're interested in how modern institutions and organisations take shape, doesn't sound very glamorous, but it's really important and interesting. And if you look at this really super complex world we're living in, if you look at the reason we've got a drone on Mars flying around at the moment, if you look at the reason we were able to invent a vaccine for COVID in the space of less than a year. It's because we're just really good at building big organisations that churn out unimaginably progressive and complex things. And that's what Bletchley's doing. It becomes a giant, as you guys often say, it becomes a giant computer in its own right, a mixture of mechanisation and human interactions that enable you to do huge amounts of work in a very scalable, very sustainable way.
And that's what the whole second spur is talking about, isn't it? It's all that industrialisation. We call it the admin story, which, like you say, doesn't sound very interesting to start with, but it's really important.
It's really important. The older I get, the less I'm interested in daring do and people running around on quarter decks. Probably, as I'm saying this, I'm realising why. Because when I was in my 20s, I obviously associated with those people because they would have been often in their 20s. Now that I'm old, and I'm sort of the age of the, half colonels and, captains, I'm more interested in kind of logistics and admin. and perhaps that shows the place I'm at in my life. But I think, especially if you look at what's going on, we're talking against at the moment in sort of second quarter of 2022, we're seeing what's going on in Russia and Ukraine. And you realise, especially in modern warfare, just the importance of this really kind of unglamorous thing about equipment and about currency, and things have to be current. The routine maintenance schedules. Essential. It's essential if you want to keep your armoured vehicles, any vehicles, able to operate and allow those 21-year-olds to do acts of daring do. They're not going to get anywhere near the front line unless the engine's been turned over. That there's not a coagulation of oil in the sump. The tyres are in a decent condition. That stuff is super unsexy, but it's essential. Yeah. And I think in a way that's what we see in that building. We're seeing a giant factory in which they're gathering up intelligence. They're going through it, storing it. I love all the index cards. I love that aspect of it. And they're going, well, look, this is a piece of information. We never know if we're going to need this piece of information. And I try and do that in my own little way when I come to a museum like yours or meet people like you that always tell me interesting things about veterans they meet. I try and store that away in my phone and in a way that I'm going to be able to access it in future. So when I'm making a podcast or a program in the future about D-Day or about leadership, I go, do you know what? There's a great example of that in Bletchley Park. And I can sort of... Yeah. So we're all trying to build up our own little networks of information.
A little database.
And obviously this was one of the first great attempts to do that and one of the most successful. And that's, again, coming back to your museum, it's so... There is the kind of cutting-edge code-breaking side, which is so exciting, pitting the great minds of the time against the most extraordinary system of encryption ever invented to that point in history. Then there's this second story, which is about how you imagine a world in which you've got an overwhelming amount of data and that data has to be shareable, actionable. And you guys pioneered that.
Well, I'm glad you liked it, Dan. I better let you have a sandwich. You've got an evening to work for us yet tonight.
Got an evening do at Bletchley Park. Very smart.
Our listeners will hear that in the rest of this show. Thanks very much.
Thank you for having me.
Ian Fawkes, I'm a friend of Bletchley Park. I have been since the park first started up. And it's good to see the way the park has expanded. I'm ex-Royal Corps of Signals, and I spent the most rewarding and enjoyable part of my career working in signals intelligence. So to see how the story of what happened before my involvement and the way things that we were doing at my time were influenced by what happened before is just amazing.
You must be able to see those connections, yeah.
Oh yes. But to see it phrased so eloquently and at a level that anyone can understand is superb. The work that has gone into this exhibition is amazing.
Thank you very much indeed. It's just walking through this crowd. It's probably the first time since COVID that I've been in a room full of like-minded people, drinking wine, eating nibbles. I get a chance to chat to wonderful friends and colleagues like these guys about the deep history of intelligence. And I work out that, that's my wife must have wanted to kill me for the last 2 years because I've been trying to do that in the context of just being bubbled with my family. So it's just, I'm sure we're all enjoying being here tonight so much and getting back to some normality and seeing this wonderful museum recovering so roaring out of its COVID purgatory. I've got some amazing people on this panel tonight. We've got Dr. David Abritat. He's from GCHQ. He's a departmental historian. Not much going on over there at the moment, so plenty of time to come and take part in this event. Dr. David Kenyon, who's an old friend, and he's the in-house historian here at the Bletchley Park Trust. And Dr. Claire Hubbard Hall, who I've come across many times on social media. She's a fantastic presence. You must all follow her wherever you get your social media rising. And she's the programme leader in military history and postgraduate study at Bishop Gross Test University. Let's start with you. When lots of people think of Bletchley Park, they think of a bunch of geniuses packed into the mansion, listening to the wireless, smoking pipes, and just being sort of brilliant. What I love about this exhibition is you see a completely different side. What's so innovative about what's going on here?
Well, the part of this story that has struck me since we first envisioned this project is Bletchley Park. Controversially, I'm going to say Bletchley Park isn't all about code breaking. Code breaking is part of the story. It's the thin meat in a fat sandwich, as I look at it. And the issue that really attracts my attention is just data management. This is an organization that is built for data, for information, and it hoovers up information from all around the world in enormous quantity and processes it, often by lots and lots of people doing very, very dull things and filling in index cards. And they do it all with some mechanical assistance, but mostly simply by brain power and dedication and pencils. But the amount of information that is able to be drawn in and processed and stored and transformed and then distributed as war-winning intelligence is just mind-boggling, given the tools that they were using. And so for me, it's all about data.
Which is convenient, because that's what everyone talks about nowadays. So that's...
Exactly. You'd think I hadn't thought about this in advance. Yeah.
Dave, what about you? What really strikes you?
Well, the Bletchley narrative is very dominated about the Enigma story, which has been well publicised in lots of books and TV documentaries and films. But to me, one of the most interesting stories about innovation in this location is about the story of a different machine, which was called the Lorenz Geheimschreiber, which was an online cipher machine used by the German High Command to pass strategic messages across occupied Europe. Very, very complex mathematics behind it. Bill Tutt managed to crack into the cipher by hand, which was an enormous achievement. But the whole process was really instigated by the establishment of a research section here. Dr. Max Neumann, who was one of the most eminent mathematicians of his time, and was brought in to really try and work out how to attack this new machine. And it led to the development of the FISH network, the Tunney network, and the understanding and the building of the world's first digital computer, which is Colossus. GPO's research section in Dollis Hill really drove forward that pioneering innovation. And it industrialised the process to crack that cipher. So instead of taking weeks and months to break that cipher, it would take hours or days, which, to get into really key strategic messages even passed by Hitler himself, certainly from early 1944 onwards, was a key game changer for the Second World War.
Claire, what about you? What are you excited about this exhibition?
So I'm super excited about the aspect of woman power. And building on David's point about administration, it's administration and organisation which is key to this industrial phase in Bletchley Park, and women at the heart. They're at the central aspect of all of this. It really was an intelligence emporium. If you think of all the memos, the paper and pencils, power that is put in place during this period, it's women that are at the heart of that. And one of the things about this exhibition is how female experience really kind of takes a heavy focus within this exhibition, representing all the different women and all the different types of work that they did, right from the select few code breakers, Mavis Beatty, and right down to even the cleaners, who were vital to ensure that this workplace, which could get quite grimy, was clean, and that would keep with positive morale, etc. So it was hugely, hugely important.
Oh, hi there, my name's Grant. I've just come round to see the new exhibition today at Bletchley Park, and I think it's absolutely wonderful. I've been here many, many times before, but this definitely helps put things together in my brain in a better way than they ever have done before. Well, I hadn't realised just how huge Bletchley Park became during the war. I always assumed, you know, how do you get 9,000 people on this site? I knew it was a bit bigger than this site, but I hadn't realised just how considerably bigger than this site it was towards the end of the war.
So much of that early part of the story that it's just a few chaps in tweed with pipes being genius codebreakers. No, it's several thousand young ladies between 19 and 21 doing 8-hour shifts of drudgery here.
Exactly, 9,000 people on site. Just wish I'd been here.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Dr. Emily Scott-Deering, and I am the interpretation lead for the Block A exhibition project.
Well, Erica has told us in the previous episode that your job title should be Master Storyteller, in fact, because how would you describe what you've done? You've come up with the theme, or you've come up with every story or every room, or what have you? Explain how you've done this.
Yeah, so I have a lovely job because I have been invited into Bletchley Park and I've been introduced to these amazing people who know all its stories and its history and who have access to its collections, all these objects and archival materials that are the real thing of Bletchley Park. I don't know the story that well when I arrive. So I have this luxury of sitting in David and Tom's office for afternoons on end, just listening, asking them questions, letting them talk about the themes that were important to them about this half of the war, this less known story. And I probably came in with the same most common assumptions and most common knowledge about Bletchley Park as many of our visitors do. You know, I knew about the famous guys. So having that realization, and then my role is essentially to listen in the first instance and then to work with the team to draw out what are the stories that really rise to the top out of what you're telling me and how could we weave them together into something that doesn't feel just like an amazing cornucopia of new information, but that feels coherent and takes you on a journey from an idea of Bletchley at the moment that this block opens its doors. Middle of the war, autumn 1942, they're growing. The war is not a done deal, as we've said before, and Bletchley has to rise to that challenge. And framing it in that moment of the job they have to do is growing, it's constantly changing, what's being asked of them is ever evolving, and they've got to be bigger, faster, but also fleet of foot. They had to keep innovating. They had to keep coming up, not perfectly, messily, coming up with new ways of doing things. So all of those ideas I learned from David, from Tom, from interrogating the collections with them and seeing me asking over and over again, this isn't a book, it's an exhibition. What can we show? What can we hear? What can we look at? Going on visits, going to see where the full story didn't reveal itself here, going to get inspiration from other places. So we've got this really intriguing opportunity, as you know, of Block A being where Naval Section did their work. And we even know from the plan where they did this activity called plotting and making sense and visualizing what they were learning from listening in on enemy messages. It's actually a dream of an opportunity in exhibition terms because you know where it is, you've got the room and you can say, come and experience the history right here where it happened. We've got the voices of the women that work there and their memories, and they can paint a picture for us. So you, in effect, meet those women in that room and you hear them tell their own stories. But the rest of it was a blank canvas because, for better or for worse, no photographs survive of that room. And nothing survives that we know of that was used in the room. That would be one curator's dream. We've got the stuff, let's just put it back on the wall. But instead we had nothing, and we were able to take inspiration from what has been put in the written record and what the veterans have remembered, and to recreate a sense of what would have happened in that room. And in having that slight room for manoeuvre, we've been able to invite visitors to come in and put themselves in those staff members' shoes and actually have a go at the plotting activity rather than treating it like a precious artefact that you can't touch. And so to come back to the role I get to play here, it's moments like that. I mean, that one was almost a slam dunk. It was on the table already and we all knew we wanted to do it. But it's been finding other opportunities amongst the stories and the objects and the veterans' memories that we have to say, okay, so working here wasn't just about code breaking. and working here also isn't just about pins and string on a map of the North Atlantic. Also, what if we could invite visitors to imagine they're having to rifle through the card catalogue drawers whilst looking at some of the actual cards from the many indexes that were maintained here? What if we could set them some of the challenges that the women working with those indexes were actually asked to do by the customers of Bletchley Park? What if we could also get them having a go at visualising some of the network analysis information that we've got? Who was talking to who? Even when we couldn't break the messages and read what they said, we can learn a lot. You know, that whole room about traffic analysis came from being shown the photograph of the Morrison Wall here at Bletchley Park, and us extending from there. What's the most fun we could have with that? We want this to work for people that know lots about Bletchley's story already, but also for families who don't know this story and want to have a go, and who we knew from our research really wanted to feel what it was like here. So balancing telling what could be a very technical story with a sense of the place and a sense of the people, that's the fun of my job. And it becomes identifying the building blocks that we'll make that from. We've got these veteran quotes to play with. These ones have amazing audio quality, so let's actually hear their voices. And these are just such a brilliant, pithy description of the essence of the drudgery of some of these jobs, or the starkness of realizing why your work was important, that you can just write them on the wall as a quote, and anybody walking down that 1940s corridor will get it just as they walk past. And these are the objects we should show them to remind them it's real, and people wrote right here at these desks on these documents. But we don't always need the real objects hidden behind glass. You'll have seen in the exhibition, we've done lots of enjoying facsimile copies of them on paper and sticking them to the walls, a wall of memos with papery texture. I love it. So when this has been such a funny exhibition to work on, because we did so much of it remotely and over Zoom from home. So my home office for several weeks was completely wallpapered in. It did. Tom did the amazing original research to identify hundreds of memos for me to read. I read and read, and we whittled them down to the ones you see on the wall. And then even within that, I knew that some people would love combing that wall and reading lots of them, and that other people would go, well, why am I looking at this? What are they about? And so we've pulled out a few that illustrate, you know, just the enormous challenges of keeping the Bletchley operation running. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because Bletchley knew they wanted to tell that story. Tom had done a lot of research that really uncovered actually the very modern idea of an institution that was, I think they call it a tight, loose organisation, but it's got enough structure to it that you can set the different bits going and have them quite regimented and able. You know, you can sort of, there's a process and you can do quality control and you know what's going to happen. But it's got to have enough agility to it that when the Italians or the Germans start doing something differently, or someone identifies a new challenge, people have permission to innovate and you can switch things up. Bletchley is really interesting in that regard. And we spoke to historians who'd studied that, great advisors on our advisory panel who helped us understand that. And I was thinking, oh, this is kind of fascinating, but also admin. I don't know. But when you start getting into what does admin mean, it means keeping the show on the road, keeping everyone fed and a roof over their heads, and solving petty disputes and people taking too many puddings and, you know, the minutiae of day-to-day life, as
and
well
how
as
how many
the
tomatoes Bletchley's allowed to have.
Absolutely. Got to be very strict about that.
Now, throughout this episode, our listeners will hear some of the comments that the Friends of Bletchley Park made at their preview the other day. Now, I'm not letting anyone into a secret, but I sent you those the other day and you loved to hear them, didn't you? It's the first feedback you've got. But more importantly, tonight, I think, will be the first time you've been round the exhibition and seen people in there. Right. Obviously, that smile doesn't come out on the podcast, but how good did that feel? Because that must be the whenever you do any exhibition anywhere, because you do this all over the country, don't you? That must be the moment when you finally see people in the exhibition.
It's 100%. It's always my favourite moment. And it's what you're waiting for. You've made these plans. You've seen them on paper. You've read the documents. Last week, I got to see the space and all of those ideas come together in three dimensions. And I got to walk through it. And that's incredibly exciting. But yeah, you're quite right. My absolute favourite bit. In fact, there's no point until you can see the visitors in it. And I don't want any visitors to get paranoid, but, you know, I follow them around a bit and I listen in. I just love standing amongst them and overhearing. I heard somebody this evening telling somebody they were with a little story, a little detail about something. And I thought, I know where they read that. And it was like five rooms ago. And I wrote that label because I found that an amazing little nugget. And they've remembered it and they've bothered to tell their friend because they find it interesting too. And it's such a privilege to start to get a sense that it's working. And yeah, hearing the buzz in the room, there's a special privilege to being here with these visitors tonight because I've met in real life for the first time many of the people that contributed to the exhibition and that I met on my research journey. So as well as Bletchley Park's really rich history, we've woven in stories of present day cutting edge work that's happening now along the same lines as some of the challenges Bletchley faced. And I had such an interesting time researching and finding those case studies and finding individuals who'd be happy to talk about their work in those terms. But we've done it all over email and Zoom. And suddenly to wander into a room and find the guy that I'd identified to tell that story standing next to it, showing his family his little piece of the exhibition or whatever, has just been, yeah, an absolute joy.
Well, I think you've done an absolutely amazing job and you should be really, really proud of it. Thank you, Emily.
Thank you. It's just been a pleasure of a journey from end to end and lovely to tell podcast listeners about it too. Thanks.
I'm Carol Turnham and I live in Gloucestershire. It's absolutely riveting all the way through. Yep. Brought it all.
Oh, bless you. But that, in a way, is what it should be doing. It brings you so close to the veterans, doesn't it?
My grandfather, my father at the end of the war, his sister here, my maternal grandfather and his son, they were GCHQ and granddad was to do with Colossus.
Oh, right.
With Tommy Flowers.
So that's why it makes you so emotional. Well, that means the exhibition works then.
It's perfect.
Thank you.
I'm going to ask you, because I'm a broadcaster, I'm going to ask you the most predictable questions in the world coming up. First of all, let's come back to you, David. Where do you feel that the intelligence that was gathered, filtered and disseminated over in that building, where do you feel had the greatest impact, the greatest influence on the course of the war?
I'd like to paint this story through the eyes of one individual because, as Claire mentioned, this is a team game. But teams are made up of individuals. And one of the major outputs from Bletchley was ISOS and ISK. So this was intelligence reporting on the German intelligence services. They were being intercepted by the Radio Security Service. They were a group of 2,500-3,000 individuals, not just in the UK but overseas as well. Some military, but mostly civilian, and most of them were volunteers. One particular individual was a chap called Edward Bridges, who won a military medal in the First World War, the Battle of the Somme. During lockdown, there was a blue plaque put on his house in Burscough in Lancashire. He was badly injured during the First World War. He was quite physically disabled as a result of his injuries, and he was bedridden. And he got into wireless technology, started to learn Morse code, and became quite an experienced radio amateur, and was recruited by the RSS to work against German intelligence service trafficking. Why am I telling you this story? Because he was intercepting a spy network that was operating in the northeast part of the US. So this was an Abwehr, German military intelligence service network run by William Siebold, who was a double agent. And the Duquesne spy network, as it became known as, was disrupted in June 1941. About 33 German agents operating across the US. And this one individual He was based in Burscough in Lancashire, was intercepting traffic. So this is a global thing. This is an overseas, you know, global problem that small individuals made a significant inroads into. Then he got a signed letter in 1942 by Winston Churchill to thank him for his war efforts. And he unfortunately died in 1942.
Fascinating stuff. Claire, how about you? What's moving the dial?
Okay, I think it's decoding and deception. I think the Second World War, in terms of deception, I think it was about who had the greatest bad tricks, and of course the Allies did, because the ultimate trick was Ultra. So if you're probably all familiar with Agent Garbo and D-Day double cross operation. And for the first half of 1944, Garbo is sending over 500 messages back to his handler, the Abwehr handler in Madrid. And of course, you can then guess the number of messages that the Germans then send out in response to that. And of course, they're all being decoded back here at Bletchley and elsewhere as well. And of course, that ability to read, you know, the enemy's messages, I think, was the ultimate trick that we had up our sleeve and really made the Allies so successful towards the latter part of the Second World War.
Dave, you must hate answering this question as much as I enjoy asking it, but come on.
Well, I'm going to go down a slightly different route. There's one of the stories that it's been really exciting for me to explore as part of the... I didn't think it was that exciting. What for me to explore as part of the research for this project is Enigma was not decoded in Block A. So we have the chance to lower the focus on Enigma and look at something else a little bit. And one of the stories we tell in is about breaking of Italian naval ciphers, the Hagelin cipher machine. You'll see a Hagelin in the exhibition. And naval section in particular were extremely successful in breaking Hagelin throughout, almost from when it was introduced, from the middle of 1941 right up until the Italian armistice in 43. And so often we talk about code breaking in terms of defence, in terms of saving lives, of protecting convoys, of basically avoiding losing. But you have to remember that the other thing that signals intelligence does is it provides an advantage in the offence. It allows you to fight your enemy better. And the impact of Hagelin breaking in the Mediterranean is absolutely fundamental. By the time you get to the autumn of 1942, the Allies and the British in particular are able to sink something like 50% of the merchant ships going to North Africa from Italy. And if you think, I mean, the loss rate in the North Atlantic, we all remember the convoys in the North Atlantic, the overall loss rate there is something around 2%. So the impact that this intelligence was able to have offensively as well as defensively is really, really crucial to the outcome of the war. And it's quite often, I don't know, maybe it's less fashionable to talk about offence than defence, but it's absolutely crucial to the problem.
Yeah, as you remember the anniversary of Alamein this October, we should think about the incredible pressure on Rommel's logistics as well.
And that pressure, the fact that he can't move his tanks because he doesn't have any petrol, is because Bletchley's helped sink it.
I'm Howard Craston, friend of Bletchley Park for many years. First impression of the exhibition is very interesting. However, way too much information to take in one hit. So I will be returning shortly with an express purpose of taking my time around the exhibition. Spend some serious time with a pair of decent reading glasses and, get stuck in with some depth.
My name is Jan Lower and I'm a director at Elbow Productions. And we've been back at the intelligence factory at Bletchley Park for our fourth tour of duty. We came here first in 2014 for the C block and Hut 11 and several of the other huts, actually. It's always a delight and a fascinating insight into the world when you come to Bletchley Park. And it's just the little stories that are sometimes nothing even to do with your own work. I remember we found out about when they first opened Bletchley Park up, and they had the first sort of reunion and invited lots of people who used to work here to it. And there was apparently a husband and wife couple who both got invites, and they were both very confused about why the other one had got an invite. And it was only then that they realised that they'd both worked there and never told each other.
There's been a few of those over the years. Yeah, like people literally... There's people who, when the first book came out in 74 or 75, and, you know, over the coffee table, they're going, "Oh, I've got something to tell you, dear." "Oh, so have I." You know, and that's when they find out, because it was so compartmentalised.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
You realise it's a different world. It's an amazing thing to touch on when you come and you're part of it. And just the whole atmosphere of the place, you suddenly see how people existed in a different time, really sort of clearly, even though they left no trace of themselves.
No.
There's still a really strong sort of sense of that sort of discipline in everything that goes on here.
And I think what I like is, you're right, you've done four different exhibitions here, but each one you've brought something unique to. You don't go, "Oh, they've done that again." You look at it and go, "Oh, they've done that." How do you do that?
Well, I think it really comes down a lot to the client, because the client really will take you forward, and you might go thinking you might do a bit more, "Oh, we know Bletchley, it's a bit like that." And they go, "Yeah, but this time we don't want to focus on that. We want to focus on this." So we have to re-engage our brain and scratch our heads a bit and then come back and try and do something that will hopefully delight them.
Oh, well, I think it's amazing. I think it's absolutely brilliant. It's another brilliant piece from Elbow.
We're delighted to be back, and we hope to be back again for another opening of another hut sometime soon.
Thanks very much, Jim.
Cheers. Thanks, Mark.
Okay, so I'm Dr. Jackie Taylor. I'm CEO and co-founder of Flying Binary, and we are co-founder of the data journalism industry. So part of the heritage of Bletchley, we're friends of Bletchley. For anybody who's been already, you've got to come see this. Block A is incredible. You are actually here. It's a very immersive exhibition. But if you haven't been to Bletchley, obviously come here to see it, but see the rest. I think when you see the rest, the huts and all the, you know, the story of code breaking at Bletchley, that sets the context. But you're not really prepared for what Block A does, because Block A puts you in the midst of what happened when this had to be scaled. And it's very atmospheric, it's very kinesthetic, you're in the middle of it, very immersive. There's lots for the kids to see and press and touch and listen. And also it's set out in a, well, I mean, the building itself is actually restored to the wartime building. When you walk in, that really hits you. You're like, this is how it was. But then it's sensitively done, the exhibition, to take you on that journey. And the individual rooms build that story, that most important story of the war. At Flying Binary, we build deep technology that does that drudge today. But still, 80 to 90% of our work is still drudge, because what you're looking for is the signal in the noise. And so our work today is the legacy of what Bletchley Park created. And so for anybody looking to get into cyber as a career, know that it's not all the glory, but when you find that signal in the noise, and then of course you see it here, you see the Bletchley team find the signal in the noise and the naval rooms and what have you. I'm not going to spoil it for anybody, but you just must come. This is an immersive experience. It's quite a different player for Bletchley, and I just think it's amazing. Thrilled with it.
Now, you are all keen Bletchley fans, and it will make you bang your heads against the wall when people say, by how many years did it shorten the war?
None.
So I'm going to ask that in a slightly different way. What is the legacy? As we walk in this exhibition today, we've talked about sort of some of its impact. What do you see as being its legacy? Let's start with you, as someone who's got a relationship with the GCHQ today.
This is really about why we do what we do. The importance of intelligence is to get information out to people that need it in a timely fashion, be that government, policymaker, prime minister, or a military warfighter on the front line. Certainly this Block A exhibition is a really, really good signpost for what we have always done in our history, which is to support military operations. It was true that, you know, before we existed as an organisation, to the current day, supporting what's going on in Russia and Ukraine. So we installed a field office in the garage just behind the mansion, which was used in Kabul and Kamsuta in 2005. And that is what we use when military deployed personnel go forward to supply SEAD to the warfighter, which can have, you know, a genuine game-changing aspect for any battle space. So this segueing back to the Second World War, April 1941, the first, it was known then as the Special Service Unit Number 1, was deployed from Loddon, which is about 5 miles from here, and deployed to the Middle East, a place called Abbasia, just outside Cairo. And this was the first real military deployment to service SEAD from Bletchley Park directly to the military theatre, to provide military commanders like Eisenhower, Bradley, Montgomery, with direct intelligence of Bletchley Park. And over the course of the Second World War, that was turned into a very professional outfit with the special liaison units and the special communications units. And at the end of the Second World War, that was picked up by GCHQ from the late 40s and is now exactly what we do right up to the current day.
What do you think about legacy, Dave?
Well, I'm going to pick up on a slightly different angle, that the story we tell here is very much a military one. It's about intelligence during a war and cryptanalysis. But I think back to, you know, when I was a kid back in the 70s, I did some code breaking because there was a competition in a comic, but I didn't think code breaking had any relevance to my life. But now all of us use ciphers every single day of our lives, whether we want to or not. They're an inevitable part of our everyday life. And it's beholden upon all of us, I think, to understand cryptography and cybersecurity and message security in a way that it just wasn't even a decade ago. And so if we can use the story from here and take inspiration from the story of Bletchley's to teach people about how to protect themselves, and particularly the young people through our learning programs, teach people about how this stuff matters more than it ever did for ordinary people, not just for people like Dave who are, you know, saving the world. The rest of us who are shopping in Tesco's, we need it just as much. And that's where I see this, the relevance of this story continuing and growing.
Claire, how about you?
So I'm going to slightly turn it on its head. And it's a legacy that can we do better when it comes to seeing women being more visible in intelligence and GCHQ. Women have always been central to SIGINT, right from the First World War with Hushwacks, Room 40, and obviously the phenomenal presence and work here at Bletchley, with 75% of the workforce being women. Really was truly a female enterprise. But intelligence, unfortunately, across the board, is traditionally a very masculine-dominated enterprise. I say that with gritted teeth. And unfortunately, after the Second World War, the women still continue to be assigned very sort of gender-specific roles within GCHQ. And there are only a few women that managed to tap at that glass ceiling. And what I would really like to see at some point in the future is that big question of when we get our first female head of GCHQ.
Bring it on. We'd all be a lot safer. Thank you very much. I hope you're all very proud of the fact that David served up the gag about serving our Prime Minister's intelligence, and I just let it go. I did not play that ball. It would not be appropriate in this setting. So, ladies and gentlemen, have a lovely time looking around at this exhibition. It's fantastic. It's a different side of Bletchley Park, a place which already had so many different aspects and ways into our history. It's a wonderful exhibition. Thank you very much for all of your hard work in making it happen. And thank you in particular to our panel tonight.
Hello, I'm John Riches, and I was 10 the year World War II finished. So I was alive when all this happened, which I find very difficult to imagine, that people were working here flat out, day in, day out. I live near Biggin Hill Aerodrome, a fighter base, so we saw a lot of the war, and I was evacuated. I thought the exhibition was lovely. It's gives you a real impression of what was actually happening, the reality as well as the vision. And I think that's important, the day-to-day experiences of ordinary people.
My name is Miles Tandy.
Now, unlike most of our guests here, there's a very special connection for you with Bletchley Park, isn't there?
There is. We came this evening because I'm here with my sister Nikki, and our father worked here from the beginning of the war. Our father and our mother met here because they both worked in the naval section. He was head of Naval Section 6, and our mother came here in 1943, and this is where they met.
And his name was?
Geoffrey Tandy, Commander Geoffrey Tandy. Well, he rose to be commander by the end of the war.
You've done something quite special tonight, haven't you?
We have.
Do you want to tell our listeners what that was?
Well, we went round the exhibition, which I thought was extraordinary. I mean, a very, very fine exhibition. But on the way up there, we found a very small map, which is copied into one of the signs, a plan, that plans out how that block was going to be used when it was first opened. Yeah. And on that, you could find where Commander Tandy had his office. And I photographed that map and took it round with me. I probably, you know, in breach of the Official Secrets Act by so doing, but I took it round with me and followed where we were up to in the exhibition, and at one point realised that we were both standing in his office. And it's mostly empty, but still had a very profound sense of being somewhere that was very special for the both of us. There is a very famous story that was told by Baroness Trumpington, Jean Trumpington, who was here as a Foreign Office girl during the war and was in his section. And when she first came here, a number of her friends thought it would be a good joke to bundle her into one of the laundry baskets that they used for moving the decrypts around and moving them from one office to another. And they put her in that laundry basket and pushed her at some speed down the corridor, at which point she crashed through Commander Tandy's door and he was in his office and was not apparently best pleased. And she was never allowed to work with those same girls again. It was made sure they were on different shifts. And so there was a sudden sense of this is exactly where that happened. And weirdly, the emptiness of the office contributed to that more than had it been full of various...
Probably more so than if it had been set dressed, yes, to be honest. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. And I remember peering through the window of it when I came here maybe 15 years ago, something like that, and it still had bits of office equipment in it from whatever it had been used for when it was the BT, you know, or the teacher training college or whatever it was. And again, that was one of the most affecting things about that visit. But to be able to stand in there was something really quite extraordinary.
I bet it was.
Thank you.
I'm Paul Garton, one of the members of Bletchley Park. This exhibition is absolutely brilliant. It shows you how it all came to be and what they did and things you wouldn't realise. And how relevant it is today. How absolutely relevant it is today. And how it relays your fears about what they do at GCHQ. Because the amount of information they get, they can't bother with you because they'd be doing it forever if they worried about what you were saying on your emails and things. It's irrelevant. Don't worry about it. What they're doing is like this, and it's brilliant. Come and see.
Dan, panel, thanks very much. Great to have you all here and some real insights into the exhibition. I hope and whetted your appetite to get out there and go and have a look at them. For those who want to go straight now, out there, turn left, keep going, and the stewards will take you up to the exhibition. Enjoy the rest of the evening. Great to have you all here.
Hello, Ian Standen, Chief Executive of the Bletchley Park Trust.
End of a very long evening, long day, and a long... How many years has this been in planning?
Oh, crikey. I mean, the restoration of the building's really sort of 5-year plan here to get together the resources to be able to take those buildings back, to restore them to their, you know, wartime appearance, and then to fit them out with the exhibition that we've got in today. So, yeah, 5 years.
The biggest exhibition we've opened to date, isn't it? And you've just done 10 years as CEO, haven't you? How does it feel to, you know, get
Bletchley Park to where it is so far?
It's been an interesting 10 years, lots of challenges. Well, I think it's been interesting in where we've managed to develop the site. You know, we've had to raise a lot of money from all sorts of fantastic donors, supporters, sponsors, and you know, we've invested it back in a range of exhibitions and enhancements to the site, from you know, the lottery project we delivered in 2014 through Hut 11A and the bomb exhibition, the D-Day exhibition opening in 2019, and then you say you know, two challenging years with COVID, but actually even through that we were raising money and planning, preparing and you know, designing and ultimately delivering this exhibition. So yeah, it's been an interesting time, but all the time making sure that we add more depth, more variety for our visitors and giving you know, more and more reasons for people to come back.
And I think that's one of the main takeaways from the new exhibition, that it tells a completely different story, doesn't it, this time?
Yeah, I mean, we're now addressing the industrial phase of Bletchley Park's story, the 1942-45 story, you know, growing from you know, 800, 900 people to up to 9,000 at the end of the war, and explaining why that needed to happen, how it happened, what it meant in terms of the production intelligence and the impact that had, but also the challenges. You know, the second half of this exhibition is all about the practical stuff, how you recruit, how you train, how you clothe, house, feed, you know, et cetera, all those things that everybody just sort of thinks happen. But actually, when you look at the exhibition, there are so yeah. many, you know, interesting things about the volume you need to create, but also, you know, the, as you've probably seen on the memo wall in the end room. You know,
tomatoes, ores, dust.
Yeah,
it's all the bizarre stuff.
Yeah, yeah, and all the little sort of interesting, you know, funny things that people were writing in memos. You know, this is a microcosm of you know working in a factory today. Yeah. All the little sort of internal stripes and little internal challenges, but all go together to make a fascinating story.
I don't know if you realise we are stood just about where we stood 10 years ago.
Yeah.
To record the first interview with you in a completely sodden, carpeted corridor in Block C, as it was then, and this is probably where we were in the middle, isn't it?
Yeah, this is about where that famous seat sits. It looks like it's in a Stasi interrogation centre, and you know, with drippy roofs, with
pigeons,
dead pigeons, carpet tiles, you know, rats, the full works here. Yeah, and of course this has been done now for what, 8 years now, and still you know doing well as really well as our visitor entrance. But yeah, what we've now done is move out from here into other buildings, brought them back to life. And providing you know, good reasons for people to come back on return visits.
Well, congratulations on 10 years. Here's to the next 10.
Absolutely. Thanks to you know, my fantastic team for working so well together. I said, particularly given the challenges in the last couple of years to put it all together and create yet another memorable experience, we hope.
Thanks to the paid and volunteer staff, visitors and veterans who took part in this podcast. To find out more, go to bletchleypark.org.uk. You can follow Bletchley Park on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. This podcast is produced for the Bletchley Park Trust by MC Fontaine and supported by Audioboom. If you like this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes. Thanks for listening, and we'll have more decrypts from the home of the Codebreakers next month.